So last week we began a new series of readings. We began in the beginning, did we not? The very beginning of the book of Genesis, the very beginning of the Bible. The story of the Bible begins with a grand cosmic scale. As God creates all that exists, as everything comes into being through his divine and gracious ordaining. But the story, at least the second account of creation that we heard last week, zooms in then to first a single individual and then the first family, Adam and Eve. There's a sense in which this grand cosmic scale and then zooming in is a bit of the pattern of this book of Genesis, at least for the first half or so. As the grand scale story of creation moves on to the story of the flood, and then it moves on to the story of the Tower of Babel. Stories that deal with the entirety of the earth's population. Now, of course, the story of the flood focuses on a family as well. Again, this grand cosmic destruction of all that exists, but also Noah and his family. After the story of the Tower of Babel, the narrative shifts almost abruptly to begin to talk about Noah's children. One of them, of course, is Shem. For a full chapter, it seems, of Genesis, they go through this lineage of Shem. And at the end of the lineage, we are introduced to a character who shall be key in all of the rest of the plot. Sarah and Abraham. Then known as Sarai and Abram. Again, somewhat abruptly, God begins to speak. Knows that Abraham and Sarah are great in their faithfulness. And God says to Abraham, go from here. Leave all that you know that is familiar, your family, the setting in which you live, and go to a new place. A place that I will show you. And God promises Abraham three things. The first is he promises him land. Now this is huge for a nomad. You shall have a place to settle. And this theme of land will play all throughout the biblical story. Of course, we know the Exodus event and Moses taking his people to the promised land. But then we will hear about the story of exile. The Israelites are ripped from their land and they yearn to return home. And that story gives way to the time that the New Testament enters in. The land is occupied by a foreign oppressor. Land will figure greatly in the biblical story. But for now, Abraham receives the promise of prayer, or promise of land, as a great thing. The second thing that Abraham is promised is that he will be the father of a great nation. Problem is, Abraham's quite old by now. However, we know the story. The promise is fulfilled. At one point, Abraham is told to consider the grains of sand. So numerous shall his descendants be. In another scene, he's asked to look at the stars in the night sky. You can count them, God says. So numerous shall your descendants be. Again, another theme we will hear throughout the biblical narrative. One of the interesting things that shifts throughout the Old Testament is how God is known. Up until this point, God is known as the Creator. I should say primarily known. God is referred to over and over again as the one who created. Now we enter the time of what scholars call the patriarchs, and God will be known as the God of Abram, Isaac, and Jacob. Again, another moniker to remind folks of God's promise to Abraham for all the world. And in a while, we'll get to this story later, but after the Exodus, then God is known as the one who freed them from slavery in Egypt. Each time, a different but a loving and a caring term for who this God is. So the third thing that God promises Abraham is that his family, the nation, will be a blessing for the world. Abraham is blessed to be a blessing. Sarah is blessed to be a blessing. Their family will pass on that blessing through the world. Again, another theme we'll see all throughout Scripture. For whatever reason, God decides to work through fallible humans, through people just like you and me. So that's the promise made to Abraham way back in chapter 12. And in a chronological assessment of the years, that was decades ago before we get to our text today. Three times the Lord announces in some grand way that Abraham and Sarah will have a son. We join them the third time. It's interesting the way that God comes to Abraham as three strangers. Now it's interesting to remember in the ancient world, there were no Motel 6s, there were no Marriott bonus clubs. If you were a traveler, you relied on the kindness of those who might serve as a way station, as a moment of respite, of safety, perhaps. And so to receive strangers is not that strange. They come to Abraham, and he greets them, welcomes them, and is very, very hospitable. One could argue, however, the extent to which he goes is a bit much. He comes, he addresses them, he bows before them. Again, in the ancient world, that's not crazy. But what happens next is he goes to Sarah and says, you know, make bread of the best flour. I mean, this is the top shelf stuff, the good stuff. And then he goes and he chooses a calf, a good one. He provides veal for his visitors. I was reading, somebody suggested that it's rather interesting that Abraham promises to do all these things, but he goes and he tells Sarah to do it, and then he tells the servant to do it. And somebody defended Abraham saying, yeah, but he walked around carrying the clipboard, make sure everything was okay. He managed it. But Abraham does serve. He serves the food, and then he stands by them, tending to them should they need. I'm also reminded in this story the alacrity with which Abraham receives his guests is not unlike, I think, the father welcoming home the prodigal son. He runs to them. He greets them. They ask for nothing, but he gives them an incredible meal, a festival. So what's up with these three visitors? Were they merely three men? Were they God in disguise? Were they angelic messengers? Well, the text, I don't think, is all that helpful. It waffles a bit back and forth between treating these three visitors as men and also as one of them is clearly the Lord's self. Now, the imagery on the front cover of our bulletin today is taken from a history of iconography that depicts the three visitors to Abraham as angels. But the angels aren't just angels, they're a representation of the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Folks have said, perhaps fairly, that that's a bit of reading the Old Testament through the New Testament eyes. That might be a little unfair, but why not? God visits Abraham. And Abraham receives the Lord with welcome and grand hospitality. So, we're unsure. Are these mere men? Angelic messengers, God himself. But then verse 9, where is your wife, Sarah? They know her name, but not her whereabouts. Abraham says, there in the tent. And then one of the men promises that, again, the Lord will come to Sarah. She will have a son. Well, Sarah hears this and laughs. A lot has been written and discussed about this laugh. What does it mean? What does it mean that she denied laughing when called out on it? Is it a laugh of disbelief? A laugh of derision? Is it a laugh born from the pain of being childless for so long? Some seek, I think, to let Sarah completely off the hook. That's fine if that's how you want to hear the story. I think, though, that is born from a bit of trying to correct the unfair way that women and Sarah have been portrayed in the interpretation of the Bible. So I think that Sarah laughs a bit cynically. It's a, yeah, right. I've heard that before kind of laugh. And just to prove that I'm not being unfair to Sarah because she's a woman, in chapter 17, when Abraham hears that message the second time, he falls on his face laughing. Sarah might have had a derisive, cynical chuckle, but Abraham takes this as a falling out of your chair, yeah, right kind of moment. And that wonderful exchange. Why did Sarah laugh? I did not laugh. Oh, yes, you did. Story progresses. The great news, the promise, is fulfilled. We skip a little bit to get to chapter 21. But that first verse perhaps could be the entire crux of the story. The Lord dealt with Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. The story of Abraham and Sarah, the story of the people that follow them, and indeed the people that came before, is a story of God promising and then delivering upon that promise. It has been said that when God promises something, it is as good as already done. You can count on it. You can take it to the bank. God does not promise something that God will not deliver. So Sarah conceives. They have a son, Isaac. The very name means laughter. And they celebrate. They look at the amazing thing that God has done. And however we interpret Sarah's laugh in chapter 18, in chapter 21, it is a laugh of unadulterated joy. After suffering the shame of being childless, especially in that setting, and waiting for so very long, a child is born to them. God promises. How do we receive those promises sometimes in the midst of our pain? Yeah, it's a cynical laugh. But God has plans for Abraham and Sarah. God has plans for us. And God will move us on from where we are to where God needs us to be a blessing. Not only for our own lives, but for the world around us. Now, of course, there's another key turn in Scripture. Another time when the Lord promised a woman a child. When we hear the story of Mary, we are reminded of the story of Sarah. It's the other end of the age spectrum, but it is just as crazy, just as miraculous, just as joyful when this long-expected child is finally born. The one who would be a blessing to all. The one who would grow to become this itinerant rabbi, a teacher, rub up against the authorities, and ultimately crucified on a cross. And there was laughter that day, wasn't there? There was cynical, deriding laughter. There was scoffing and derision as Jesus hung on the cross by those who did the deed and indeed those who stood by and witnessed it. This is God. He'd be coming down from that cross now. He said he'd save others, can't save himself. That, of course, was Good Friday. The cynicism, the derision, the mocking fades away through Saturday, and then on Sunday morning, Easter morning, the derisive laugh has turned to a laugh of sheer, unadulterated joy. That the promise of the Messiah to come and to defeat the powers of sin and death has been fulfilled. God promised, and it was done.